Okay. So we left off last time in the middle of Perek Dalet in Shmuel Aleph. We were up to Perek Dalet. We had read Pasuk Yud Beis. We'll just review it. What happened was is that there was this horrible defeat in a battle, two battles that took place between the Israelites and the Plishtim. The first battle, unfortunately, caused 4,000 soldiers to be lost, at which point they went ahead and came up with this great plan to bring the Aron to the battlefield. And on the second battle, the loss was even greater, that there were 30,000 soldiers, unfortunately, who fell in battle. The rest of the soldiers seemed to run away. Chofni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli, were killed. This is just the psukim, so if you have a sefer, you're fine. Chofni and Pinchas were killed, again, on the same day, which was the trigger. This is the os. Eventually, that Eli would know that the horrible prophecy would come true, and the Aron was kidnapped. The holy ark was kidnapped by the Plishtim. The Pasuk Yud Beis is basically how the news went ahead and spread. There's no internet. There's no Twitter. You're going to have to hear news from someone who is actually at the battlefield. So Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayaratz Ish Binyamin Mei Hamaracha, a Benjaminite man ran from the battlefield, Vayavo Shiloh Bayomahu, and he arrived in Shiloh on that day. So, and we had been describing it was not a far journey. Umadav Kurim, his clothing was ripped, Vaadamal Rosho, and he had earth on his head. Both two basic signs of mourning, M-O-U-R, mourning, and that, you know, there's like apparently all emotions are going on in this Ish Binyamin, because on the one hand he's running, so he's showing that he's in a rush, but he still had enough time to begin the mourning process over the loss of life that took place that day. And Rashi had quoted the Medrash that this Ish Binyamin was actually Shaul, turned out to be Shaul, who, again, happens to be the fact that here he's not known by name, that's actually, we're going to see when we develop Shaul's character in Perek Tes, a couple of weeks from now, his, you know, the calling card that Shaul has is humility, is being humble. It is perhaps the reason why he's chosen as king, and in certain ways his humility ends up being his downfall, being too humble in certain situations perhaps. So the fact that, if you take this Rashi, that it was Shaul, Ish Binyamin, he's so unassuming that his name is not even being mentioned. He's a Benjaminite. He's running from the battlefield. And Rashi had mentioned that he had successfully, while the Aron was not able to be saved, he was able to save the actual Luchos. We saw that some of the other Rishonim disagreed with Rashi. So here he's coming, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayavo, and he came. Vihine Eli Yoshev al Hakise. And behold, Eli was sitting on a chair, Yad Derech Mitzapeh, kind of Yad Derech next to the way. He was sitting next to the way, Mitzapeh, and Eli himself was Mitzapeh. He was looking out. We're going to see this looking out is not necessarily that he himself was looking, because we've already discussed, and it's going to be mentioned again, how his vision was impaired. But he was sitting on the way that would be looking out. It gets a little bit confusing, because if he's sitting on the way looking out towards someone who would be coming to the town, it would make sense that he and the people around him would notice the Mavasser, the one coming to tell the news first. But Eli, in terms of the town of Shiloh, seems to be the last to know. So we have to try to explain that apparently there were two ways to enter the city. We could call it the front or the back. Eli was sitting at one of those ways, and he was sitting facing a direction where news could come. Meaning Eli knew about the battle with the Plishtim. He knew that Klal Yisrael had taken the Aron to the battlefield. And as the pasuk goes on to testify, why was he so, quote-unquote, nervous? Ki haya libo chared al Aron Halokim. His heart was afraid. His heart was fearful over the matter of the Aron, that the Aron had been taken and the Aron was at risk, and he was worried about that. V'ha'ish ba'l ha'gid ba'ir, And the man came to tell, he arrived to inform the city, Vatizak kol ha'ir, and the entire city erupted in a cry. Vatizak, they let out a cry. So the understanding is that the where ancient Shiloh, and this I heard from those who know archaeologists, that the way Shiloh was set up is that there was like the front entrance of the city, which was an actual city, and kind of in the back of this city, that's where the Mishkan was located. So that means the Mishkan was also located towards, you know, there was probably a way out of the city in the back. So that's where Eli was. This individual who ran must have approached the city from the entrance that was opposite side of where the Mishkan was. So therefore, he reached the city first. He informs the city of the loss of battle, of the two sons of Eli, of the Aaron. All the information is out there in the city. The city erupts in a cry, and Eli still doesn't know what's going on. Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayishma Eli es kol hatza'aka. Eli hears the sound of the cry. Vayomer, and he responds, presumably to the whoever's around him, Me'kol ha'amon hazeh. What is this whole commotion? What is going on? Va'ish mihar, the man, meaning the Ish bin Yamin, who was coming to tell the news, hurried up. Vayavo vayagi le'eli, and he came and he told Eli. He was came to tell Eli the news. Pasuk tasvav. The Eli ben Tishim u'shmona shana. Eli was 98 years old at this time. The einav kama v'lo yachol liros, and his eyes stood. V'lo yachol liros, he was no longer able to see. This terminology of saying einav kama, so the Mesudas Tzion and the Radak explain an idea that his eyes basically became fixed, that his eyes lost the ability to see. Whether I'm not an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist, but the Radak explains that when the moisture in the eye ceases to exist, so then the eye can't move. Normal eyes, our eyes are constantly moving. It might be slight, but the eyes are constantly moving. His eyes lost the ability to move, which is representative of the fact that he couldn't see. Now, why we're being told this here, I haven't seen a good answer for. Specifically because in the beginning of Perek Gimel, we were already told, right there towards the beginning, we were told a phrase, the Einav Heichelu Chehos, and in reference to Eli, his eyes began to weaken, lo yuchal liros, he was not able to see. And here we have Einav Kama, v'lo yuchal liros, his eyes weren't able to see. So there we gave this whole explanation how it was in the context of his sons going the wrong way or maybe the fact that Shmuel had to help him. What it adds to the information here, so his age adds, we understand that he was of an older age, that in 98, we would consider that to be of an old age. The Tanakh already has described him as a Zakein Ma'od, which means it's paralleling that language. It's saying that he's old. What new information or any information is added by this? I'm not sure what the significance of it. Obviously, it was significant because it's in the Tanakh. But after that, I don't know what it's adding. No, it might just be informing that he couldn't even appreciate that the man was on his way to him. Meaning he couldn't see the he could have been maybe looking down at the city, and maybe he could have seen a commotion, and now he's only hearing the commotion. But that's where it's at. Pasuk Tazayin. Vayomer ha'ish el Eli, and the man said to Eli, Anochi haba min amaracha. He establishes who he is. He says, I have come from the battlefield. V'ani min hamaracha nasti hayom. Not only was I somewhat around the battlefield, but I ran from the battlefield today. I was from it. I was right there. Meaning I'm a first reporter. I'm a first reporter. I'm reporting what I saw. Eyewitness. Vayomer, and Eli said to him, Mehayahadavar bini. What happened, my son? Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayan ha-mevaser, and the one, a mevaser is someone who says news. Sometimes you could be a mevaser tov, you could be a mevaser ra. One of the ways that we refer to Eliyahu Hanavi, we call Eliyahu, he's going to be the mevaser. He's going to be the mevaser tov. He's going to be the one who's going to announce good. He's going to be the one who comes and announces Mashiach's arrival. He's a mevaser. That's why we always say besorot tovot. We want to hear good things, hear good reports. So vayan ha-mevaser, the reporting one answered. Vayomer, he said, Nas Yisrael lefnei plishtim. The Israelite army ran away from the plishtim. The battle ended in a retreat, an utter retreat. The gam magefa gedola haisa ba'am. And there was a great blow against the people. Now, whether or not he actually informed him of the number of casualties, we don't necessarily know. Again, the words of the Tanakh are not always it's not a stenographer who was there telling exactly what was said. This is what Hashem wanted us to know what happened. So he tells him that they had to retreat. V'gam agefa gedola haisa ba'am, a great blow took place to the people, meaning casualties. The word magefa is going to mean casualties. It means a plague, but in the context of war, it means like a blow that is loss of life, a strike, being struck and down. So that's the kind of the second piece of news. And we're going to actually discuss that it's seemingly in a type of list. V'gam shnei vanecha mesu, and also in addition to a great casualty coming to the masses of people, your two sons have been killed. Chafni and Pinchas. V'aron ha'elokim nilkecha, and the Aron of God was kidnapped by the enemy, meaning was taken by the Plishtim. Pasuk Yurches, Vayehi Kazkiro es Aron ha'elokim, and it was when the one giving the news mentioned about the Aron of God, meaning that it was kidnapped. Vayipol me'al hakise achoranis. Eli fell off his chair backwards. Ba'ad yad hashar, in the direction of the kind of opposite where the gate was. Vatishaver mafrakto, and he broke his neck. Vayamos, and he died, presumably instantly from the fall. Kizakin ha'ish v'chaved, Eli was old and Eli was heavy, and that perhaps led to the fact that he was not able to withstand this fall. And then we're told, kind of parenthetically, v'hu shafat es Yisrael arba'im shana. He had judged the people for 40 years. That for 40 years, he had been the official shofet, the official judge. This was still in the time period of the shoftim. While we're in Sefer Shmuel, we're no longer in Sefer Shoftim. We've discussed before how Eli was a shofet, and even to some degree Shmuel is perhaps considered to be the last of the shoftim. So it's obviously the death of Eli is quite unfortunate. But we see a little bit of a continuation of that which we discussed last time. That when we were discussing last time, what was it about that Klal Yisrael, what was going on in Klal Yisrael that caused such a loss of life, such a great blow happened to 30,000 soldiers. So we explained a lot that it had to do with the fact that they took the Aron, and a missed placement of priorities and of perhaps looking at the Aron as a type of almost intermediary between them and Hashem, that the Aron was playing too much of a role. And here, we just keep hearing it echoed again and again about the Aron, where you hear, and again, this is Eli obviously on his own level, but it seems that this was something going on in Klal Yisrael at the time, looking at the Aron, that the Aron is too much. Eli's sitting by the way, and he's nervous. He's not nervous about the army. He might be, but that's not what the Pasuk is telling us. He's not nervous about the army. He's not nervous about his two sons. He's worried about the Aron. And then when the individual, the Ish Binyamin, tells the news, it's almost like he's trying to tell the news, give Eli the easiest news to take first. You know what? It ended in a retreat. Okay, a retreat is not so bad. It ended, there was a great blow, a lot of casualties, but at that point, he didn't mention about his own two children. It's only natural that a greater blow would be hearing a greater, more horrific news would be hearing that your own children were casualties than those who aren't your children. So he says that his two sons, and then the last thing, it's almost like he's saying, and like the worst thing that happened is that the Aron was taken. And then the Pasuk testifies, what was the news that kind of shocked Eli the most, that literally caused him to fall out of his chair? Pasuk says it was when, and it's almost like the Pasuk is screaming this to us, because it says in such clear language in Pasuk Yudches, Vayihi kazkiru es Aron Elokim, when he heard that Aron, that caused him to fall off his chair. And this seems to be the theme that's running through the whole parak, and we're actually going to see it in this kind of, we're about to jump into like a post story, where in terms of what we need to know about Perek Dalet and about the status of Shiloh, the status of Eli, that's done. We now know, that Aaron has been taken, we know that Chafni and Pinchas are dead, we know that Eli is dead. We really can begin Perek Hay. Perek Hay is going, the theme of Perek Hay is going to be the status of the Aron while it was in the control of the Plishtim. So we really could begin Perek Hay, but the Tanakh chose to give us a little bit of a post story about the birth of a grandchild to Eli, and that somehow you have to try to understand that post story is relating to the main essential part of the Perek, because if not, then almost in a way, like what is it doing there? So the post story has to do with the fact that Pinchas, Eli's son, who was just killed, had a wife. Her name is Eshes Pinchas. We're not told her name, and again, it's not uncommon to not be told someone's name. We have some famous women who we're not told their name. The mother of Shimshon, who obviously plays a big role in the announcement of the birth story, where Amalek comes to her, we also don't know her name. She's called Eshes Manoach. So here we're going to be introduced to someone named Eshes Pinchas, and she was pregnant. It appears that she was not at a full term in terms of in her pregnancy, and this disturbing news. And this, you know, I think there's some research in this. I'm not a doctor at all, and I didn't check this out, but I think that sudden news, tragic news, can induce labor, can put a woman into shock, a woman who's, let's say, close to, but not at full term. And that's what seems to happen. So from Pasuk Yotes, Chaf Aleph, and Chaf Beis is this post tragedy story, which unfortunately includes its own tragedy. Pasuk Yotes. The Kalaso and his daughter-in-law, meaning and Eli's daughter-in-law, Eshes Pinchas, the wife of Pinchas, Hara Lalas, she was going to give birth soon. Rashi notes that the word Lalas, it's really trying to say Laledes. Laledes would be the normal way to refer to birth. But the reason why it's spelled Lalas is because it's connected to the word Yalala. Yalala is a type of cry. Yalala is a type of groan or cry that it was in the context of all the crying and all of the sad news that brought her to go into labor. Batishma es hashmua, the pasuk continues, she heard the news. El halikach aron halokim, how the aron was taken. Umes chamiha, and her father-in-law died. V'isha, and her husband had died. Vatichra vateled, and she crouched down to give birth, and she gave birth. Ki nefchu aleha tzireha, her labor pains came upon her. which is a language of almost like being, she did not go into labor naturally. This was not a natural inducement of labor, but it was because of the fact that she had heard the troubling news about the Aaron, about her father-in-law, about her husband. And as she's, when it says the word vateled, so it's probably not immediate. There was a little bit of a process here, but she gives birth. And it seems to be it was a very distressful type of birth. Pasachaf, uche'es musa, as she was about to die. Vatadaber na nitzavos aleha, there were women standing by her who spoke to her and said, Al tir'i, do not be afraid, ki vein yaladet, you just gave birth to a son. Velo ansa, she did not answer them, velo shasaliba, She didn't pay attention. She didn't take it to heart. But she was clearly in distress. The pasuk is describing that she's on the verge of death. Up until recently, I can't vouch for statistics now, but a couple of years ago, the last time I saw a statistic that in third world countries, one of the leading causes of death amongst women is still childbirth. That while, thank God, countries like Eretz Yisrael and the United States have advanced, and that, you know, that it's uncommon to hear these things. Unfortunately, historically, it was common, and here that was the case. And she doesn't seem to take the comfort that's being offered to her about the fact that she had a son. Pasachav Aleph, Batikra Lanar. She named the son. She expressed to those around her that she was giving a name to her son. Ikavod. His name would be Ikavod. You ever heard the name Ichabod? Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from. Ikavod. Lemor, and she explained herself, Gala Kavod mi Israel. Kavod, honor, glory, has been exiled from the Jewish people. El Alikach Aron Elokim, in terms of the Aron being taken, the Alchamiha, and about her father-in-law, the fact that he had died tragically, the Isha and her husband, who also obviously died tragically. One more pasuk. Vatomer, and she said, Gala kavod mi Yisrael. She echoed her sentiments, that honor has been exiled from Yisrael. Kinilkach Aron Elokim, because the Aron was taken. Now the actual translation of Ikavod is either understood, as Rashi explains it, kind of a conjunction of the phrase of ein kavod, that there's no kavod, or the Radak says a kavod, like where is glory? Kind of a rhetorical question saying where is honor? Where is the honor? Where is the honor of Israel? If you know the army had this utter loss, the shofet is now dead. My husband Pinchas is dead, and the Aron is taken. So there's no where is the honor that could exist? So why are we being told this post story? So on the one hand, you could say it's while the story of the loss of the battle and the war and 30,000 dying, so that's a story dealing with the masses. That's a story dealing with Klal Yisrael at large. But maybe for us to appreciate the tragedy, we enter into a little family where the husband was killed, his name was Pinchas, his wife gets thrust into labor, and it ends up being a traumatic labor. The fact that she didn't enter it naturally, presumably that had to do with the fact that her body wasn't prepared for labor, and maybe that led to the complications that led to her death. And then, and she's calling out, and she refuses to be comforted, and she names her son after the state of affairs, the state of the union of the Jewish people at that time. The state of Eretz Yisrael is horrible, Ikavod, and so she names it as such. But in addition to that, there might be something more significant, and this is an idea based on what Rabbi Bazak teaches in this parak. Also including the commentary of the Ibn Ezra, actually, on this week's Parsha. So, the fact that I said this week's Parsha, that this should be a a hint. There, or that's next week. This weekend, next week's parsha. This story sounds very similar to the story of Rachel giving birth to Binyamin. The story of Rachel giving birth to Binyamin seems kind of similar. And Razak takes note of five similarities. And like we say every time, when you have similarities, each independent similarity doesn't necessarily make the case. When you make a list, it just points you in the right direction. That there's a similarity, and then you're tasked with the question of why are they similar? So both of these stories, both the story of Rachel giving birth to Binyamin and Eshes Pinchas giving birth to Ikavod, they're both complicated deliveries. When you read the Psukim, it seems that this is not standard, this is not regular. Both cases have women surrounding the mother, offering words of comfort. If you take a look in Sefer Bereishis, take a look at the Psukim, you have women standing there, whether they were the midwives, whether they were just the friend, whatever, companion. This, in Rachel's case, maybe it was, you know, Bilhah, Zilpah, maybe it was Leah. There are women standing by offering words of encouragement saying, do not be afraid. In each case, the mother names a child based on the pain, based on something really tragic, right? Rachel says, Ben Oni, the son of my affliction, the son of my pain. And Eshes Pinchas says, Ikavod. In both cases, the mother dies immediately after childbirth. Perhaps that's the strongest similarity. And just as an addendum, Rav Bazak pointed out, maybe there's not such a coincidence that the person who spread the news in this story that led to the birth of Ikavod, the person that spread the news, was an Ish Binyamin, a man from Benjaminite, a man from that same son of Rachel, that Rachel gave birth in her death story. Meaning, even if you don't want to take Rashi into account, the Tanakh says it was an Ish Binyamin. So it doesn't have to be Shol, it can just be an Ish Binyamin. So the question is, what, now that you have this similarity between the two stories, what's the significance? So when Yaakov, we'll get a little credit for having a parsha shir. When Yaakov is in the house of Lavan, he's tremendously successful. 20 years of being there, it's time to go back to Canaan. It's time to go back to his father Yitzchak. Hashem was the one who came to Yaakov and said it's time to go back. And Yaakov calls his wives, and it's time to go back. And the pasuk tells us that Rachel took the truffim of her father. The truffim are seemingly some type of avodah zarah. Rashi immediately says, why did she take the truffim? She wanted to take away her father's ability to worship avodah zarah. So she stole his idols. That's what Rashi says. Ibn Ezra comments on Rashi. Rashi is quoting from a medrash, where Ibn Ezra says, basically asking the question, which is a better, maybe even a better question than the answer that he gives, is that if Rachel just wanted her father to not worship idols, she didn't have to keep them. She could take them and bury them on the way. She could take them and just, you know, throw them off the bridge, throw them into the desert. She keeps them in her possession. So the Ibn Ezra doesn't say, Chas v'Shalom, that Rachel Imenu was worshiping idols. And that's why she wanted to keep them for herself. Ibn Ezra says maybe they weren't actual idols. What they were a means of divination, a means of predicting the future. Someone like Lavan might have taken these truffim and put so much of a focus on them that he basically turned it into a type of avodah zarah. But the reason why Rachel kept them was not, God forbid, to actually worship avodah zarah, but to maybe at some point make use of their divination powers, to predict the future. In concert with worshiping Hashem, in concert with proper avodah Hashem. And what Ibn Ezra is explaining is that maybe that nuance, Rachel didn't appreciate that in order to be in Eved Hashem, it has to be, there's no room for any divination. There's no room for any predicting. You put your faith in God 100%. And so what's representative of Rachel taking the teraphim is not having the picture, not having the focus of it's all 100% Hashem, and enough, everything else fails in comparison. And so the story of Rachel is highlighting the importance of putting your faith 100% into Hashem. Now you bring it back to our story and the birth of Ikavod. Again, you see in her words, so you might think, oh, it says that she first names Ikavod because the Aron was taken for her father-in-law, for her husband. Then we have a capstone. We have this last pasuk in the perek where she repeats again, Vatomer Gala Kavod Miyisrael, Ki Nilkach Aron Elokim. So she's basically saying the number one reason, the main reason why I named my son Ikavod is because the Aron was taken. Again, echoing this idea that maybe you're thinking I've said this too many times, this perek, that Klal Yisrael was falling victim to putting too much of a focus on the Aron and not enough focus on just putting their trust in Hashem. Whether it was going back to the beginning of the parak, what we talked about, maybe they didn't ask permission to go to this war. Maybe or the fact that they took the wrong Aron, or the fact that they're just putting way too much focus on the Aron, not enough focus on Hashem. And that's perhaps the connection between the stories. And then when you have that in mind, you now understand the significance of adding this as a post story. Meaning, this isn't just hearing about the an additional casualty that the wife of Pinchas is also going to be, we'll throw that in, we'll throw her into the category, to the list of the casualties of this war against the Plishtim. But this story is just there to reinforce perhaps why the downfall to the Plishtim came. The Plishtim, now we're going to shift, and we still have some time. So we're going to actually begin the next parak, parak 5, which is a separate sheet if you have it. The Plishtim on their side of things are idol worshippers. And they view their victory in battle as a victory not only against the Israelites, but against the God of the Israelites. And it's their God beating out the Jewish God. Not that the Jewish God doesn't exist. They have a lot of emuna in Hashem. They just also have emuna in their God. They're idol worshippers. They're polytheistic. They believe in multiple gods. And so they believe, and we saw that in Perek Dalet, how they had some Yiras Hashem that maybe Jews need to strive for. They were very afraid when the Aron first came. So Perek He, it's a relatively short Perek in terms of verses. But this is what's happening with the Plishtim having the Aron in their control. And again, the Plishtim were on the coast. On the coast of the Mediterranean, kind of where the majority of the Gaza Strip is the land of the Plishtim, but it extends. We're going to mention some of them. There were five main Plishti cities, five main metropolises of the Plishtim. Two of them are Ashkelon and Ashdod, which are, that's in Israel proper. But that during this time, those cities, those ancient cities, which are near where the modern-day cities are, were in the control of the Plishtim. So we're beginning Perek Hei Pasuk Aleph. Uplishtim lachu es Aron Elokim. The Plishtim took the Ark of God. Vayivi'uhu me'Evan Ha'ezer Ashdoda. And they brought it from Evan Ha'ezer, which was the site of the war, as we had seen in Perek Dalet. And they brought the Aron from there, from a place called Evan Ha'ezer, Ashdoda, to the city of Ashdod, to one of their main cities. Pasuk Beis. Vayikhu Plishtim es Aron Elokim. The Plishtim took the Ark of God. Vayaviu Oso Beis Dagon. And they brought it to the temple, the house of Dagon. Dagon is an idol. Vayatzigu oso etzel Dagon. And they placed the Aron next to the idol of Dagon in this temple. So what should stand out to you is it almost appears that we have two introductory psukim right next to each other. Pasuk Aleph says, and the Plishtim took the Aron and brought it somewhere. Pasuk Beis says, and the Plishtim took the Aron and they brought it somewhere. It sounds redundant. It sounds like a repetition, which is noticed. It would appear that they're really two, even though this parak is short, is actually going to be two stories going on. There is bringing the Aron into the midst of the city, and then, which we will then see the effect that the Aron has on the inhabitants of the city. And separately was this episode of bringing the Aron directly into the temple of the Avodah Zarah that they worshipped. And so it almost appears that there are two stories happening in a way simultaneously. And what hints to that is that there these two introductory psukim. So for the city of Ashdod, that's Pasuk Aleph. And that's talking about the citizens of the city who are going to each individually, for their sake, unfortunately, for the divine sake, fortunately, be afflicted with a punishment. And that's why it says they bring it from the battlefield to Ashdod. And then in Pasuk Beis, it's saying that it was specifically brought into the house of the Avodah Zarah, into the temple. Now the taking of the Aron into the temple is basically symbolizing that my God went ahead and beat your God. That's one of the approaches brought down. That the Medrash has two approaches, where Reish Lakish is of the opinion that it was there to gloat. They were there to gloat. They wanted to say, look at our God, Dagon, who we'll discuss in a second. Our God, Dagon, went ahead and beat the Jewish God, which is represented by the Ark. So let the victor kind of be holding it over and stand and being in the presence of the one that lost. Rabbi Yochanan argued on Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yochanan says in the Medrash that they had a little bit of good intention by saying, you know what? This is representative of the Jewish God. He is also one of the gods. So let's have him be in our temple. But it's the likelihood that Reish Lakish's explanation seems to kind of fit in with what happened at the time. Now this Dagon, so everyone can understand what's inside the word Dagon. Dag, fish. So Rashi says it was an idol shaped like a fish. The Radak gives a little more exotic. Says it was like a mermaid. Half fish, half man. Or merman, mermaid. Half fish, half human. That from the waist up it was human, and from the waist down it was fish. Which is what we would call a merman, mermaid. Mer person. Whatever. Politically correct. So the Plishtim lived on the Mediterranean, on the coast. Presumably, they were fishermen. You usually, and this is obviously hard to say usually, when you are an idol worshiper, you worship the gods that affect you, that are close to you, that will either help you or that you think are strong. It's very natural that they're going to have a sea god. Because the sea, they're going to live and die with the sea. When you're in Beit Shemesh, so as a city that we're going to see existed then, it got the term Beit Shemesh most probably because of people worshiping the Shemesh. Because when you're in Beit Shemesh, that's all you feel is the Shemesh. So you have to have proper, in an idol worshiper's mind, you have to have proper respect there for the Shemesh. And you're going to live and die with the sun. If the sun's going to be too strong, it's going to ruin you. If the sun's going to go easy on you, then you'll have it nice. That's actually one of the Rebbeim from YU. Once he met a student who was studying in Israel for the year, and he asked him where he was studying. So the boy said he was learning in a yeshiva in Beit Shemesh. The boy had quite the tan. So the Rebbe said to him, he said, it looks a little too much Shemesh, not so much base. Base Medrash. So. But the Plishtim, they worshipped a sea god. A sea god here is Dagon. And they have a temple in Ashdod, there's a temple called Beit Dagon. Pasuk Gimel. Vayashkimu Ashdodim imacharas. The Ashdodim woke up the next day. Vihine Dagon nofel lefanav arza. And behold, this Dagon had fallen on its face onto the ground. Lifnei Aron Elokim. In front of the Ark of God. Vayichu es Dagon. And they took Dagon. Vayashiva oso limkomo. They returned it to his place. To its place. So we understand, based on the fact that we're going to see the next sukkah, that even in this first occurrence of the idol falling, that this was not a coincidence. This was Hashem causing the Avodah Zarah to fall. They did not pick up on the subtleties of the hints here. First of all, idols don't fall. You have to imagine that they did whatever they could to make sure that this was a base Dagon. This was a temple built for this idol. You have to imagine, again, maybe this isn't the case, but you just imagine that they took care the same way Lahavdil, Elif Alfei Avdalos, you know, I don't know how this Aron Kodesh here is built. I'm imagining that unless there's God forbid, a natural disaster, this Aron Kodesh can't topple over. And if everything else in the room was pristine, fine, and the Aron toppled over, and there wasn't a natural disaster, you'd have to imagine that something out of the ordinary, something very out of the ordinary took place. And here it says, the Pasuk testifies about it, that it was nofel lefan of arza lifnei Aron Hashem. It fell in front, almost like showing that it is not necessarily bowing down to the ark, but laying down, kind of like giving up, surrendering in front of the Aron. And what do? They just take it and put it right back up. They don't take any heed. They don't see it as a possible, wait a second, let's try to pay attention. Maybe this is not an equal system of the Aron and Dagon. Pasuk Dalet. Vayishkimu baboker. They woke up the next day, mimacharas, on the next morning. Vine Dagon nofel lefan of artzim. Behold, Dagon had fallen down to the ground. Lifnei Aron Hashem, in front of, before the Ark of God, of Hashem. The Rosh Dagon, and the head of this idol. Ushte kapot yadav, and its two hands. Definitely with the approach of the Radak, we understand human hands. According to Rashi, would be the fins. Kirusos ala miftan, were severed, and were laying there on the threshold. Rak Dagon nishar alav, only the actual body remained intact. So at this point, it's very clear that the ark fell. That the Dagon, the Avodah Zarah, fell down and was destroyed. And this was something that was divine. And we're told in parentheses we're told, Pasuk Hey, Al Kain lo yidrachu kohane Dagon v'chol haba in Beit Dagon al miftan Dagon ba'ashdod ad hayom hazeh. That this became such this episode was so, became so important in their eyes, the priests of Dagon would no longer walk on this threshold, and anyone who would come into the temple would no longer walk where this took place, on this threshold of Dagon in Ashdod ad hayom hazeh. That it almost sounds like they maybe never even repaired it. In a sense, I mean, we don't know, but it almost sounds like this was considered to be, I don't know if it was bad luck or what have you, but they refused to even walk, and they apparently this helped them learn their lesson, and they understood the message that was being sent. The message being sent is this is not an equal God system, and you have to, and this is something that it's going to take the people a while to realize. It very well may be that it was the right decision to take the Aron. That maybe the Jewish people deserve that. But to go ahead and treat the Aron and to put it into a house of Avodah Zarah, when regardless of who you are, Avodah Zarah is something that the entire world is commanded about, that wasn't proper. And the Plishtim are held responsible for not treating the Aron properly. And they also are punished for being the ones while and we mentioned this a little bit, I think, last summer or the time before that, the Jewish people clearly had to be punished. That Hashem wanted to punish them. If he didn't, it wouldn't have happened. The Jewish people had to be punished. The Plishtim didn't have to be the people that punished them. The Plishtim are held accountable for their decision to go to be in battle with Klal Yisrael. So they do deserve some level of punishment. Let's see Pasuk Vav. The story shifts not only the effect that the Aron had on the temple of Dagon, but what about the inhabitants of the city? Vatichbad Yad Hashem El Hashdodim Vayishimim. The hand of Hashem became heavy against the citizens of Ashdod. Vayishimim, here the art scroll translated as devastated. It's not just it's like a worse sense than just destroy. It means like severely. So to severely destroy. Vayach osam, and he struck them with the following plague, batechorim. He struck them with a plague of an intense case of hemorrhoids in their bodies. Es Ashdod v'eskol gvuleha. And this plague of hemorrhoids affected Ashdod and its surrounding towns. Pasuk Zion. Vayir anche Ashdod kichen. They became very frightened because of this. Va'omru lo yeshev Aron elokei Yisrael imanu. And they said, the Aron, the Ark, the God of the Jews, the manifestation of the God of the Jews, cannot stay imanu, cannot stay with us. Ki kashasal yado aleinu v'al dagon Eloheinu. Because it is harsh. It has been hard against us and against our God, Dagon. So they're recognizing here they're declaring the defeat in the Beit Dagon and declaring obviously that they're losing out. So what do they do? You have to remember, you can't think like a Jew, and you can't think like a Western individual. You have to think like an idol worshiper. Gods have limited powers, not limitless power. And so for whatever reason, the God of the Jews, he's being successful in Ashdod. But if we move the ark to another place, not necessarily going to be successful. Not necessarily, he might lose his power. Because he's only powerful in Ashdod for whatever various reasons. So Pasuk Ches, Vayishlechu, Vayasvu, Esarnei Plishtim. They sent and they gathered the governors of the Plishtim, Aleihem, to them. Vayomer, and they said, Manasel Aron Elokei Yisrael, what do we do to the Aron, which is the attributed to the God of the Israelites? Vayomer, they said, Gas, Yisof, Aron Elokei Yisrael. Let the Aron go to the city of Gas. The city of Gas is another one of the five main cities. The five main cities are Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gas, Ekron, and Aza, Gaza City. Vayasebu es Aron Elokei Yisrael. So they go ahead and they transferred the Aron that it should be brought. They brought it to the city of Gas. Pasuk Tes. When it was brought there, the hand of God was against this city that caused a great, great commotion. And the entire city was struck from young to old. And they were also plagued with the hemorrhoids. And perhaps here, it seems that it's gotten more intense. Last time, meaning when it was in Ashdod, it just said that it affected. Here it's saying, Mikaton v'ad gadol, which means maybe last time it wasn't the katana, maybe it was only the gadol, maybe only the adults. And rather than learn, you know, in the Beit Dagon, it only took them one time to realize the hand of that God is all powerful. Here, it seems they make the same mistake. Pasuk Yud. Yeah. So there's an explanation which says that they stole the Aron. The Aron has inside of it the Luchos, and that contains the Luchos is the closest thing to God's handwriting. It's kind of like the mysteries of the world, and so they disgraced the hidden part, the hidden treasure of the Jews, and so they were punished in a hidden type of way. They were punished internally inside their body in an inside kind of inside a manner.
Okay.
Again, that. Yeah. The main reason is because God chose it. That's the main reason.
I was gonna say, yeah.
That's the main reason.
So
they make the same mistake again in Pasuk Yud. Now they send it to the city of Ekron. When it comes to Ekron, the Ekronim scream out saying, you sent it to me that it's going to that it's going to kill me and my people. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayishlachu Vayasvu Kol Sarnei Plishtim. They gathered all of the officers, the governors of the Plishtim, Vayomru. They decided, Shalchu Es Haron Elkei Yisrael, Vyashovlim Komo. They want to send away the ark and let it return to its place. Velo Yamis Osi Vyasami. It shouldn't kill me and my people. Ki Haisam Mehumas Maves Bechol Ha'ir, Kavda Ma'od Yad Ha'alokim Sham. There was a panic of death in the city because of the hand of God. Last pasuk in the parak. Vanashim asher lo mesu hugu batchorim batal shavas ha'ir shamayim. Those who didn't die were stricken with these hemorrhoids, and there was an outcry of the city going up to heaven. And apparently, in the third location, this plague led to death. We're not told the numbers of death, but it seems that the plague built up, that it started out, you know, maybe you would say it was like only hitting some of the population, then it's mikaton viad gadol. There's some hints that it might have gotten, the severity might have gotten worse, and then in the last stage it leads in Ekron, it leads to death. There seems to be a little bit, when you if you like this idea of comparing to other stories in Tanakh, so you could describe this as God sending a plague against the Plishtim. It's not the first time that God sent the plague. You will recall what we mentioned in the previous parak, that there was a sentiment among the Plishtim that maybe God had run out of plagues. To which God responds, "You think I ran out of plagues? You know, I sent 10 in Egypt. You think I ran out of them? I'm going to send you something that's more severe." There seem to be similarities between this short perek and the psukim describing the plagues that took place in Mitzrayim. That the word vayak, and he struck against them. That's a word that's used in both places. The fact that we talk about the hand of God, so many locations in the Yetzias Mitzrayim story, it talks about the hand of God being against the Mitzrayim. And here, a couple of times, we mention the hand of God. In the Yetzias Mitzrayim story, we talk about how it wasn't just attacking the Plishtim, but it was also Hashem punished their gods. The Hashem, we sing that in Dayenu. We talk about that he went ahead and attacked the gods of the Egyptians as well. The Egyptians cried out in pain. Here, the Plishtim cried out in pain, and the term shalach, to kind of send out, send the Aron and send So that's also connects the theme. And the idea might be, Rav Bazak explains, is that the Plishtim needed to understand that Hashem runs the world, that he's not just the God of creation, but he's the Borei and the Manhig. He created the world and he drives the world. He's the driving force in the world. And that you need to understand that even if the Jews needed to get punished, it's part of God's plan. He's still controlling it. It's not that you weren't victorious against the Israelites because of something that has to do with you. You were victorious against the Israelites because they needed to be defeated. They needed to be punished. And the sense of haughtiness that they had, the Plishtim themselves had to be punished. Eventually they get the message. They get the message that it's the presence of the Aron. It's inappropriate for them to have the Aron. And they come to the final conclusion that they need to get the Aron give the Aron back. So Be'ez Hashem, next time we meet, we'll begin to learn Parak Vav. Parak Vav is going to be the process of returning the Aron back to the Israelites. The Plishtim want no further control of this Aron.